Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Paul Smith, author of the 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell, and you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello, and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on, they are recorded during the cocktail hour. And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. So, Paul Smith, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, and I think I'm a drink ahead of you. I'm into my second glass of wine now.
Well, how about you? That will not stand, good sir. I will not tolerate such a thing. And now,
catch up.
Yes. Oh, here we go. Oh, don't worry. Now you are in the Cincinnati area, right? That's where you're originally from, and hopefully that's where you are now.
That's where I have been for quite a while. I'm not originally from the Cincinnati area, but I spent 20 years at the Procter & Gamble company, and they're headquartered here. So all roads lead to the mothership, as you know.
Right, right. Now, you're originally from Arkansas, is that right?
That's right. Good memory. The state of Arkansas, I am.
There you go. So I've only interviewed two authors who are from Arkansas, and only one of them was actually there. So not, you know, wow. I consider you someone who's been sort of banished from there.
I thought I was the only one.
Right. Well, I guess the Clintons, they moved to New York or
that's true.
Something like that.
That was some hyperbole on my part. But yes, I'm happy to be in that small club.
Yeah. And you're there with your sons and your wife, I believe?
My wife and two boys, yeah, 20. In fact, we're all together, as you know, all quarantined now. So my 20-year-old is home from his sophomore year in college, taking the rest of the semester from home, you know, homeschooling, mm-hmm. or not homeschooling, but, you know, remote learning. And my 15-year-old, a freshman in high school, and same thing, schooling from home. And my wife and I are working from home as best we can, which I'm sure is part of what we'll talk about here, is how we're filling our time.
Yeah. And my daughter is home. She was home for spring break. She's a senior in college, just about to graduate, got home, and they said, yeah, don't come back.
Don't come back.
Yeah, and exactly. Don't plan on graduation ceremonies either. So I'd never really thought of myself as a homeschooler, but now that you've put that idea in my head, I guess I've been sort of facilitating the education here, and I think that's primarily by making some runs to the liquor store, which the governor of Virginia has said those people are very essential, and it's important that the liquor stores stay open. But I just wanted you to know, Paul Smith, I'm here in Virginia, and I have never been to the Cincinnati area. But one of my dear friends, whose name is Charlie Daniels, and that's his real name, he's from Cincinnati, and he lives here in the Virginia Beach area, and I chatted with him before we went on the call here, and he is such a hardcore Cincinnati person. The only thing that's missing is he's not living in Cincinnati. So he went to the Naval Academy, he was in the Navy, and now he lives, he retired, and as his wife, she retired, Kathleen, Naval Academy classmate, he married her, and so they both retired. Anyway, he is such a hardcore Cincinnati Bengals fan that he lives in Virginia, he still has Cincinnati Bengals, and we're talking about the American football team. He still has season tickets. He flies to Cincinnati just to go to those games.
Wow. And him and 10 other people.
Right. Well, but I believe now I know we're talking a little bit about American football here. So, and all you other 31 football teams in the United States, just calm down. Okay. Pour yourself a drink. Let's talk about the Bengals for a second here. He said that the draft is April 23rd. And I say this because they did have the worst record last year in the NFL. So they get to pick first in the draft. And he said, Joe Burrow, who's from Ohio, is going to be picked. And he said, it's going to be good if he picks him, but Joe Burrow is not a big fan of Skyline Chili. And so people in Cincinnati know about Skyline Chili. I've had they've served me this Cincinnati specialty. And is it true, Paul Smith, that everyone in the Cincinnati area is required by law to have a backup reserve stash of the makings for Skyline Chili in case of a pandemic?
Well, I don't know. It's certainly not a law, but I can tell you that we do in our pantry, and we've already tapped into it. So, and that's probably not unusual.
Oh, good. Well, that's good to hear. And he said that to ask you if you have some of these other specialties from your area, like Grater's Ice Cream or Burger Beer, Utipole Beer, or what's the other one? Schoenling? I can't pronounce it right. These are all these German names.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a pretty big German population here. I wish I had almost all of those, and I don't. We still have some of the Skyline Chili left, but no Grater's Ice Cream in the house, and none of that particular beer. So we were kind of running low on supplies. We need to make a grocery store run.
Be strong, Paul.
Thank you.
We need you to make it through this.
Yeah,
we'll make it. And keep writing books so that you can pretty soon become a member of the Marketing Book Podcast 3-Timers Club. And I say that because you were most recently on the show to talk about the 10 stories great leaders tell, which was absolutely fantastic, a very, very short book. And in the book, you promised everyone it would take an hour to read, and it took me an hour and 16 minutes, only because I kept stopping to write down ideas that I was stealing from the book. So,
oh, that's great. That's a good excuse for your 16-minute below-average performance.
Right. Right. Yes, I was handicapped, on the golf course. So,
yeah, good.
Well, good. Well, what has changed in your world? I know you must spend an awful lot of time on the road speaking and doing workshops for various organizations. Did all that suddenly fall off the calendar?
Yeah, well, I used to spend a lot of time doing that. So yeah, so literally every single, in-person speaking engagement that I had on the calendar for the last week of March and all of April, May, and now June have completely vanished. Now, most of those will hopefully get rescheduled later in the year, but some of them are just, gone. And and who knows? I mean, first it was April dropped and then May dropped and now June has dropped. And so I'm not sure where the end of that is. And the other, kind of bad news for somebody like me is that, looking at book sales over the last 3 weeks, my book sales are down 90%. So it was one of those things where, maybe when people are spending all this time at home, they'll just buy a bunch of books because they don't have anything to do. And at least for my books, that turns out not to be the case. In fact, I don't know if you've noticed, but Amazon's curtailed their purchasing of books for, restocking so they can focus on, important things like medical supplies and food and staples and things like that in this time, which is a very smart thing for them to do. And
more immediately life sustaining things than books.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, so one of the things that I'm doing with a couple of my publishers right now is making the e-version, the electronic book, I guess, version, digital version of a couple of my books free for 2 weeks. Oh, and the purpose of that is to allow delivery services like Amazon to focus on delivering those essentials that people need while they're homebound, and not tie up the space in the trucks and their delivery people's times with delivering hard copies of books to people. So 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell, I think, depending on when this show airs,
this should might air be, on the 11th, 12th, the 14th, I think. Yeah, April 14th.
Might be done by then. I think it was a 2-week period of time, might be over by then. But by that time, the 4 days with Kenny Tedford, my newest book, will be, which is a different publisher, but I've talked them into it as well, will be free, the e-version of it, for 2 weeks, starting, I think, about the Monday before this podcast comes out.
Oh, okay.
And the same purpose. I mean, we're trying to, you know, this is what I can do to help is not have, you know, tying up, you know, trucks with my books, and giving people, you know, something free that they can spend their time on. So it's the small contribution that I can make.
Yeah. So the first time I interviewed you was about your phenomenal book, Sell with a Story, which just keeps showing up on every great list of sales books and other kinds of books. And it was that book where I finally understood this concept of storytelling. I was just completely misinformed about what it was. There's probably a lot of people that are out there, and now that I understand more of it, that's why I urge marketers to be careful when they use that term around their management unless they understand the context. But talk a bit about this book, 4 Days with Kenny Tedford, Life Through the Eyes of a Child Trapped in a Partially Blind and Deaf Man's Body. It's a real departure from the types of books that you've published in the past. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, and that's a good way to describe it. It definitely is a departure. So it is sort of a biography, or it started out being a biography of just an amazing human being. And his name, obviously, is Kenny Tedford. And he's deaf, and he was born deaf in both ears, partially blind in one eye, partially paralyzed on the left side of his body. And so unable to speak well until he was probably 10 years of age. So in that sense, kind of like Helen Keller. But he was also born with a fairly significant learning disability. In fact, today, so he's 66 years old today, but if you give him an intelligence test, a cognitive test, he tests out at about the third or fourth grade level. So 10 or 11 years of age, you know, mentally. So in that sense, he's kind of like Forrest Gump. Even though Forrest Gump's fictional, right? But so he's kind of a combination of Helen Keller and Forrest Gump, but a real live human being who's living life with those kind of challenges. And so he just, you know, an incredibly unique, fascinating human being, unlike anyone I'd ever met before. And so I met him seven years ago now, and just was fascinated with him and just kind of fell in love with the guy and ended up writing his life story. But I say it started out as a biography because it turned into something more like Tuesdays with Maury, if you've ever read that book. So, which basically it turned into a book about our 4 days that was the majority of the time that I spent interviewing him for the book. So instead of it just being a chronology of his life, it's a chronology of the 4 days that he spent at my house with my wife and kids that we just talked about, with him telling all of us his life story and me and my wife and kids reflecting on the stories as he was telling us and how it impacted us and how it made us think about our own lives and our own privilege that we have that he didn't enjoy. And, made me think about, you know, the kind of husband and father that I've been and maybe how I could do that better. And even actually how I could be a better business person. So you'll actually see a dozen or so places throughout the book where I learned just these amazing lessons from him that I could apply to my work life as well, which I didn't expect to see that. So it ended up being more than just a biography of his life, but a reflection on his life from the part of me and my wife and kids.
And what led up to you having him in your home?
Well, it was, I've probably not talked about this, but my second book is called Parenting with a Story.
Can we all just come to your house when we're in Cincinnati?
No, you're not, you are invited, but the whole world is not. My wife would kill me. So, but my first book is Lead with a Story, right? So it's a book about storytelling for leadership. And as I was writing that book, I started sharing some of the stories with some people to get some feedback on it. And I consistently got this feedback that, man, you know, I think I could use that story with my kids at home too. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to the idea of my second book, Parenting with a Story. And so about the time I was ready to write that second book, I met Kenny Tedford at the National Storytelling Conference down in Covington, Kentucky. And it just occurred to me, this is the first guy I need to interview for this book because he's just got such an incredible life story. I want to capture, you know, a page or two of my book. I want to devote to him because I wanted, you know, 100 or so stories from interesting people around the world to fill up this book. And so he's the first person I interviewed for that book. And I was literally 39 minutes into my 1 hour interview with him in this book. And I know that because I record these interviews. And at the 39 minute mark, he'd already told me like four or five just fascinating stories. And I could, you know, I was only going to pick one of them for the book. And I said to him at that moment, at 39 minutes, I said, have you ever like written all these down? You should like write a whole book about your life. It's like fascinating. And he said something to the effect of, well, yeah, I'd love to. And people ask me all the time after my performances that, you know, do you have a book? And he said, but you know, that's one of my, you know, cognitive limitations is I can't write. I can speak and I hope I tell stories that are interesting and they are, by the way. But when I try and write, I just can't do it. And at that moment, Douglas, I said something that I'm sure surprised me as much as it did him. I said, I'll do it. I'll write your book. And here I was, I mean, literally I was under contract to write this other book, Parenting with a Story, that I had not written a single word for. Mm. And I just committed to this guy that I'm going to write his life story. And so.
And you don't just go around, Paul Smith doesn't go around saying that to just anybody. Can I write your book?
No, he's the only person I've ever said that to. And I'm just embarrassed that it took me like 6 years to do it because, anyway. Yeah, so I finally did it. And I finally found, you know, I had to find a different publisher for it because, you know, business book publishers aren't interested in, you know, biographies about deaf guys. But anyway, it took a long time, but I finally did it. And I, you know, it's absolutely going to be the most meaningful book that I've ever written so far and or ever will. I just can't imagine writing a more important, meaningful, human book than this book about this man's life that is just full of so many joys and tragedies and humor. And I mean, just think about navigating life in the body of a grown man, but with a child's mind. I mean, the things that happen to this guy in his life are just blow me away. I mean, you know, just to give you a peek under the hood, he was like a senior in high school, 18 or 19 years old, you know, he's a few years behind and, His buddies literally hired a prostitute for him because the guy was a virgin and so they hire this prostitute because they think they're gonna make a man out of him. But so he's 18 years old, so he's got an 18 year old man's fully developed body, but mentally and emotionally he's a child. So like this woman shows up and starts taking her clothes off, and he's like, "What are you doing? Let's just watch TV." And like he just doesn't know what to do with her, and like he's never completes the transaction. I mean,
it reminds me of that section of the movie Big with Tom Hanks, where he's still a child in a man's body.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's the perfect analogy. That's exactly what happened. But it was real. It wasn't just a movie. So those kind of things just happen throughout his life, and they're just humorous and amazing and touching and heartwarming and tragic all at the same time.
Mm. That sounds like the movie I want to see.
Yeah.
I don't know that your other books will be turned into movies, but that would be such an interesting story idea. I guess I should be careful using the word story around Paul Smith because,
you should.
Different. You know, remind folks, let's pretend it's the first time I read your book, okay? And I did not understand what storytelling was. And it is not making something up. It's not lying. It's it's actually somewhat scientific and related to the way the brain processes information. Can you remind listeners what that means, the storytelling?
Yeah. So if you were to ask grownups, especially in the business world, what a story or storytelling is, they'll give you all kinds of different definitions. You know, our marketing plan tells a great story, and our brand logo tells a great story, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. But ask a 10-year-old what a story is, and they will know what a story is. They'll tell you, oh, well, that's when you tell somebody about something that happened to someone. Okay. And that's it. That's the right answer. It's when you tell somebody about something that happened to someone. So in grown-up language, that means a narrative about something that happened to someone. Right. So it literally, it's a narrative about something interesting that happened in someone's life. It's not the 5 points of your sales pitch. It's not the 3 reasons why you should buy what I'm selling. It's not the 2 main takeaways I want you to take away from my speech or my memo. That's a message track. Those are talking points. Those are bullet points of your presentation. And you need all of those things. But a story is literally a narrative about a time and a place where something interesting happened to somebody that other people can learn a worthy lesson from. And so that's what a story is. And so what the storytelling I teach is how to find those real things that happen to real people that are so amazing and compelling that they will help other people, convince other people to go think or feel or do whatever it is that you need them to think, feel, or do, which, by the way, is basically leadership or marketing or sales. They're all essentially the same thing. They're convincing people to do what it is that they need to do.
Mm-hmm. And one of the many things I remember from the book is that one of the worst things you can do is say, let me tell you a story.
Oh my God, yes.
What
do you do when somebody says something like that around the office?
If they say, let me tell you a story?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe it's not going to be relevant, or they're going to be making a bunch of BS up, or
right.
I need to be on guard.
Right. Your eyes roll into the back of your head.
Yeah.
And you go, oh my God, like, just tell me what you want me to know. Like the analogy I use is that telling a grown up that you're about to tell them a story is like telling a 5-year-old kid it's time to stop playing and come in and take a bath. Right. In both cases, neither of them want to do it. But once they're in it, they love it and they don't want to get out. Right. The 5-year-old doesn't want to get out of the bath once they're in it because it's fun, but they don't want to stop playing to come in and take a bath. It's the same with an adult with a story. If you tell them, let me tell you a story, you know, if they're at work, they're like, oh, you just tell me what you need me to do. I'm busy. I got a lot of things to do.
Don't waste my time. Yeah,
exactly. But once you start telling them a fascinating story, they don't want you to stop because it's a fascinating story. So just don't ruin your story by announcing that you're going to tell a story. It's the easiest way to kill a story right off the bat.
Right. So instead, I've tried to say things like, well, you know, Larry, what you're describing reminds me of something that came up, a very similar situation once before. And then hopefully I'm doing that better.
That was good. That was good.
So
yeah, that's the hook.
What would be, well, it's also relevant to what they're about to hear, but their body language changes and it's like their drawbridge goes down and they're listening.
Yes.
And they see themselves in that story. So can you give an example of a story a marketer could use, or a story that salespeople could be using? There's so many of them, but even from the book, The 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell, you had marketing and sales of those 10.
Yeah.
And even some of the others were relevant to what marketers and, you know, like the founder story or some of these other things.
Yeah. So I'll pick for this group, your audience. Let me pick the marketing story from that 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell book. So the example there is a guy named from a guy named Sherrad Madison, who's the CEO of United Building Maintenance. So it's a commercial cleaning company. And they are the folks that clean your offices at night, right? And when he's in a sales call with a new customer or a prospect, he always tells them about what he does when he gets a new contract. You know, he says there's always a 30-day transition period where, you know, my company's going to take over at the end of the month. And he said, during that 30 days, I always do the same thing. I go sneak into the building in the middle of the night just to see how they're cleaning the building now.
The incumbent supplier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I want to see how the old company that's on their way out is cleaning. And it's probably not as nefarious as I just made it sound, because he gets permission to do it. But, you know, the purpose, of course, is because at the end of the month, when he takes over, most of those employees are contract employees and he's going to inherit them. So he wants to know if they're well-trained and equipped to do their job. So he said, so, you know, last month we took over the Verizon building in New Jersey, and so it's 2:00 in the morning. And of course, I sneak in there and I go find this guy, and he's vacuuming the carpets. And he's using the same kind of residential quality vacuum cleaner that I use at home. And he said, now the problem is those corridors are 12 feet wide and a half a mile around in that building. But it's going to take this guy a month just to vacuum the carpets once, right? So when we took over, we put him into, you know, a triple wide, you know, industrial grade vacuuming machine that'll do the job in a fraction of the time and a much higher quality job. Plus, that machine will last forever because, you know, it's designed to, whereas that residential machine he's using is going to break down every couple of weeks. So then I went to another floor and I found somebody shampooing the carpet. And he said, it's kind of the same story, right? They, you know, they're using the same kind of residential quality squeeze bottle, walk behind shampooer that I use at home, and the same problem, right? So when we took over, we put him into one of those riding shampooers, right? Like the, you know, the, like the Zamboni driver at the ice skating rink, right? He said, and those machines, again, much better job, fraction of the time. Plus, notice it gets the guy off his feet so that he has, you know, fewer, he'll have fewer injuries to his feet, and I'll have fewer workman's comp issues, which means my client has fewer workman's comp issues. He said, but the last thing I wanted to see was how they were dusting the offices. So he said, I, you know, went to another floor and looked on top of the file cabinets. And he said, I saw the same thing on top of all of them. It's a little like a half a moon swiped out on top. And he said, I know exactly what that means. And you probably do too, Douglas. You know, those cabinets are all like standard 5.5 feet tall. And he said, the problem is most of the people dusting the cabinets are less than that tall. So it's not that they're lazy, right? They're just literally not tall enough to reach to the top of a 5.5 foot tall, 3 foot deep file cabinet. And that's what leaves that kind of half moon swiped out on top from their hand, right? He said, the truth is they'd be better off not dusting it at all because it's the contrast between the dusty part and the clean part that makes it obvious that it's not been cleaned well, right? So he said, when we took over, we just gave them all these little 18-inch plastic wands to attach to their dusting claws so they could easily reach the back of the cabinet, right? Boom, problem solved. So he tells that little story in his calls with these prospects. Instead of saying, well, you know, the reason why we're better than our competitors is that we use industrial grade triple wide vacuuming machines. We use commercial grade riding shampooers. And I give all my dusters 18-inch extension wands. And that's why we're better, right? Now, I mean, those are his key three features and benefits that differentiate him from his competitors, right? Which is your marketing pitch, right? Your key features and benefits that differentiate you from competition. But just listing them like that is not nearly as memorable and as compelling as the story, because now that you've heard the story, you can see in your mind's eye that guy riding around on that shampooer like that Zamboni driver at the ice skating rink, right? You can see somebody easily reaching the back of the cabinets with their wand. And it's such a better way to explain why you're better than your competitors than just listing your features and benefits. So that I call that a marketing story. And it's about marketing, but it is a story, not a list of reasons to buy you.
Mm. So Paul, what changes have you already noticed in the, I guess, the marketing and sales world, the business world? What do you, any idea of what, if there's going to be, today I was listening to a podcast by Professor Galloway from NYU, and he was talking about how, you know, a lot of things aren't really going to change. They're just going to, this pandemic is going to accelerate things. You know, people don't change all that much. What do you think, any ideas about what may change or what folks could be doing now in this sort of weird time we're in?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the best thing I could do to answer that question is tell you what I'm doing. I don't know that I have a whole lot of wisdom for other industries other than mine. But so for me, I think I already mentioned, right, all my speaking engagements have been canceled, book sales are down. So what I'm doing during this time is figuring out how to create my or recreate my business model in an online, virtual, remote format, right? So instead of hiring me to come, you know, in person live and teach your sales team or your marketing team or your senior leaders how to tell better stories, how can I do that online? So I'm now spending my days creating an online-based training session, some that could be pre-recorded that you could watch and just pay for separately. And, you know, I'll just watch these videos and do these exercises and answer these questions, take these quizzes, and eventually learn this stuff. Or a live, not in person, but a live training course where it's the same thing I do in person, but we're all virtual, right? So, but that takes a redesign of the learning plan, right? I can't just, you know, say, hey, we're going to spend a day, you know, on a Skype call. Like nobody wants to stare at a computer screen for a day, right? So it requires rebuilding the training course designed for a virtual delivery. So now it's got to be broken up into, you know, 90-minute segments spread out over several days. And with homework in between. And so anyway, you know, for me, I've got to redesign what I offer for today's world. And I would imagine most people need to be doing the same with their businesses, designing it as best they can to be delivered under quarantine, right?
Right. So we don't really know how long it's going to last, but it almost doesn't matter because this is something that you could still offer in maybe updated form 5 years from now. And right. Just today, I was reading a book that the Harvard Business Review Press sent me called Can You Hear Me? How to Connect with People in a Virtual World. And it's by Nick Morgan. And I really hope that he'll come on the podcast soon because that's a very relevant book. And in the book, he's explaining the reality of trying to connect with people in a virtual world and how it's just much more difficult than face-to-face. But he then goes on to he lays out the problems, but then he goes on to say, which I haven't gotten to yet, how best to try and deal with that. So, I mean, it's very clear, human to human, the way to go, but you can't always do that, and it's just the fact of life. So that might actually be one that you might really appreciate as you're putting together that.
Yeah, I'll check.
That program. So I had an idea, and Paul Smith, you don't know this, but those things rarely happen for me. And so here's the story.
Okay.
You know, people are trying to figure out what to do, and I've been hearing from listeners, and some of them have gotten laid off, and some of them are students staying, you know, they're just talking to me saying, they just stopped everything. I was just about to graduate with an MBA and all these sort of things. And they're saying, you know, or people who just graduated from college and they're asking, you know, they just, you know, they want to talk. We all want to connect. And I love being able to chat with folks. And so one thing I've been suggesting that people do is, for those marketers anyway, actually for the salespeople too, HubSpot, and we're a HubSpot customer and they're very popular software, they have this phenomenal free academy called HubSpot Academy, and they have all these great certifications which are updated pretty much every year because so much of the subject matter changes, you know, all these aspects of social media or SEO or sales, you know, all these different types of things. And so I've even gone back and updated a couple of my certifications that I needed, and the cool thing is they put them onto your you then have the option of putting them on your LinkedIn profile, which recruiters somehow find, and they think, wow, this person's showing a lot of initiative, and they are, you know, they're demonstrating that they are capable of teaching themselves things, which is real important these days because everything's changing so quickly. So I had this other idea, and it had to do with Paul Smith's Sell with a Story. Okay. Now, I know that's not the last book he wrote, but I can't stop talking about it because it kind of had a transformative effect on my business understanding. And in the book, you explain all the science behind why this storytelling works. And you then go on, and even at the very end, I recall there are 25 stories that every salesperson should have? And it doesn't mean ones that you make up. This is the framework, but you need to fill in what your actual story is, and here's how you do it.
Yeah.
And what I would suggest is for salespeople and especially marketers, get a hold of that book and start working. Don't try and do all 25. That's another thing I learned from your last book.
Right.
Don't try and do all of them at once. Figure out the first five that would be most helpful right now.
Yes.
And start working on that. So I hope you agree.
Yes,
talk absolutely. About what folks could be doing.
Yeah, so the 25 types of sales stories that I cover in that book, most people don't need all 25. Those are the 25 most useful types of sales stories that I found while I was doing the couple of years worth of research that went into that book, interviewing, you know, dozens of salespeople around the world and dozens and dozens of procurement managers, right? Professional buyers, right? That's really who I wanted to talk to, because who better to tell you what sales stories work and which ones don't than the buyers who get to make those decisions. So, my guess is most salespeople, as they read through that book and look at the 25 different types of stories, that there's going to be like 10 to 12 of them that, yeah, I've got to have those 10 to 12. But your 10 to 12 may be different than my 10 to 12 out of those 25. Now, there's some people that may want all 25, but it's not just going to be two or three that you need. There at least half of these 25, everybody's going to need, but your half may be different than my half.
I think that would be a great thing also for marketing folks to do, because you can use everything the salespeople are using, you can use to help tell some of those stories. So.
Yeah. In fact, most of my clients, when I, you know, that we schedule a training, it's typically the sales force and the marketing team together, because it turns out, I think in a significant number of cases, that the marketing folks are generating a fair number of the stories that the sales folks then need to go deliver. Right. Mm-hmm. So those teams need to be on the same page. So many of these stories are very clearly marketing type stories that are being delivered by salespeople. But there's a fair number of those 25 that are very clearly salespeople stories that a marketer wouldn't be quite as interested in. But there's a pretty broad overlap between the two.
Yeah. It's one of those ideal books for the marketing book podcast, because I really like books that deal with the intersection of marketing and sales.
Yeah.
So what has Paul Smith been learning recently about being at home and being with the family probably more than you're used to?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I'm finding that one thing I'm craving that I'm having like withdrawal symptoms for is live music. So like, you know, you go out with your wife on a Friday night and, you know, have a dinner and someplace that's got a guy, you know, playing the guitar in the back or whatever. And you know, we love doing that. Well, we haven't done that in over a month. So what I've decided to do, and I'm going to do it this week, and I will invite you to it. I'm going to hire a local musician, one of my favorite guys who, you know, I know the bars he plays at. I know the you know, restaurants he plays at. I'm going to hire him to perform on a Zoom, you know, private virtual meeting, whatever you call those,
oh,
right?
Oh, wow, yeah.
For me and my friends, my wife and kids and their, you know, our friends and their kids. And we'll probably also figure out a way to live stream it like on Facebook or something. But oh, okay. The point is, there are all these like local artists who just like me are kind of out of work right now. Right? I mean, all their gigs have been canceled. You know, and, you know, unlike folks like you and me, you know, artists like that tend to, you know, not have the wherewithal to withstand this kind of a extended period of time without their normal income. So I'm feeling some, you know, desire to help them, plus just help the economy in general. Plus I want to hear some live music, man. So I have a Zoom account. I know the guy I'm going to hire. I'm going to hire him. We're going to put on basically an online concert, and I'm going to invite my friends to it, and you'll be one of them. And, you know, we'll just listen to some guy play some awesome music live, and he'll take requests and almost like you're in the bar there with him, except you're just on your computer. So that's how I'm going to entertain myself.
And you'll record it.
Yeah, I can do that, and if he wants to use it for, you know, his marketing purposes, he can certainly do that. But it'll be live, and I think there's a way to live stream it to Facebook or whatever. But it's the live component of it.
Yeah, that
is the important part. I think, right? I mean, watching it after the fact would be nice because he's a great, you know, musician. But you know, if you want to listen to great music, just turn on your phone and pick your favorite song. Right.
Right.
It's
right.
The live component that I'm missing, that I'm yearning for.
Right.
So that's what I want to try and recreate this week. So we'll see how that works.
Well, I want to make those moments last forever. You got to understand that. So the reason I asked that question is, well, if it turns out in some recorded form, we mm-hmm. will include it on this episode at marketingbookpodcast.com. So if listeners go to yeah. marketing, you're getting a blog post out of this, Mr. Smith.
Okay, you know, good.
So I'm just saying. listeners can go to marketingbookpodcast.com, and then there's a this isn't going to be a regular thing because I'm either, you know, going to run out of booze or hopefully the quarantine will go away, or I'll run out of authors to talk to. And after I talk to enough of these authors, I think the rest of them are going to pretty much run away and not want to do it. But if you go to marketingbookpodcast.com, there's a logo we made up for authors getting authors in quarantine getting cocktails. Yeah. See, I'm catching up with you now. I just finished that good scotch. And so then you click on that, and then you can go to all these interviews that have been going on. I was just thinking, you know, we can put – there's going to be one there for Paul Smith, and we're going to include a link to your site, which is what?
Leadwithastory.com.
Okay. And a few other things that you've mentioned, and go from there. So I hope that
lovely
things go well for you. I appreciate you checking in with the listeners to the Marketing Book Podcast. I do hope you don't stop writing these books. So,
I won't.
Please stay safe and healthy, and I hope that your family is getting used to having you around.
They haven't thrown me out yet. And it looks like yours hasn't either. So we're doing well so far.
All right. Take care. Be safe.
All right, everybody. Last call.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.